What's going on, people? Welcome to Read the Fine Print, the show. I am your host, Detravius Bethea. Today I got from the Cannabis own and mad other podcasts he's got, but it's all under that umbrella. Corey Bowens, aka Monkey Blood, aka Monk. He got some other things that he goes by. I don't know all of them. He's like a Wu-Tang. He's like Wu-Tang with it, with mad aliases. And this episode is actually based on the Wu-Tang documentary. What's going on, old brother? How's everything going? Before we get into
it, with you, man. I'm good, man. I'm just trying to maintain, man. Try to just keep busy, man. Keep feeding my From the Canopy podcast network. You know what I'm saying? Keep having something for the people to check out, man. And I've been having fun with it, man. So it's been keeping me busy. You know, doing this Rona, you know, allow me to channel energy because it's wild. Because it's like, I got time now, but there's nothing to do. You know, I can go grab something to eat, but you can't sit in nowhere and eat. You can't like hang out. You can't even like, you know, I'm even just used to walking around, you know, maybe doing running errands and just people watching and stuff like that. You can't do none of that now. So I'm just trying to keep myself busy, man.
Yeah. And I tell you on and off the record that I admire what you're doing and the focus, because I remember when you first started. Because I tell everybody, like, I started a podcast like 3 or 4 times and got one episode done. I was like, I hate my voice. I'm not doing it. I was leaning on somebody else to help me with it. And you just went with it. How many years you got in now?
Man, we pushing 4 now that I think about it, dude. That's crazy. Like, let me see. So, yeah, I think this coming June will be my 4th year doing this kind of stuff. And that's wild now that I think about it. Yeah.
And I like the shirt, man. I like the shirt. Yeah. You got the merch. Man. Yo, I'm glad you support this, man. Yeah, I'm glad. And you got the Art Dealers Academy joint on, too. Yeah. I actually was going to wear my Allegedly shirt. I have the red one. I have two, the red and white one and the white and red. Mm-hmm. I don't have that color. Only, but like, that's for, like, fraternity reasons. But, I mean, I could have one. But, yo, thanks for supporting me, man.
Yeah, man, I try to do that, man. If I see my folks doing something cool, like, I try to, you know, I'll buy a shirt or, you know, click on something, subscribe, you know, I'll check out your podcast, you know, check out your videos. So, because I think that's really important, man. You know what I'm saying? It's weird that a lot of times people don't feel like it's worth checking out until it gets the cosign. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's weird. You be doing this stuff for a long time, but then maybe you get a certain guest or they see you rolling with this person. I'm like, oh, I'm like, but dude, I've been doing this.
You've been doing that. Absolutely. So the reason why I wanted to check in on you anyway, but the main reason we was going at it, quote unquote, in air quotes, in the group text we have about the Wu-Tang documentary, I finally watched the joint, and you are... I've said this many of times on and off records. You are the biggest Wu-Tang fan that I know. And I know that you interviewed the videographer, the guy that actually recorded it, right?
Yeah, Damian Corey came on shortly after, I think it premiered the first time. So I think Showtime just put it on for free on YouTube. On
That's where I saw that just now.
So because I think we've got also season 2 of that Hulu series.
Coming out, yeah.
Yeah, that's coming soon. It's back. I mean, I'm not sure if they're back into production per se, you know, because it's tricky, man. I think most of Hollywood and TV is getting back into it. You know, they figured out ways to do this, you know, during the Rona, during the, you know, the quarantine and do it safely. So I think everyone's just trying to get back to getting money now, man. Like, everything's about to open up, dude. Like, safety be damned.
Yeah,
they're not gonna have the people sitting out for another summer, man. It's probably better that they do, but it ain't gonna happen, dude. It's not happening. It's
not. Safety be damned. That's funny. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious. Yeah. So the reason why I had you on there, because like I said, like the backstory, the behind the scenes, the stuff that nobody should know outside of our group, is that we was kind of sort of, we disagree sometimes and we agree sometimes, but we was going back and forth on the Wu-Tang and. In the business. So I was thinking about the business aspect of it, but I also was reviewing it as a fan. But, you know, then I, you know, the business side, because that's what I do now. And then the lawyer side came. It's like, damn, like, this is crazy. But what did you think about this? Let's just review it overall.
I thought it was good, man. Honestly, I feel like they might have went an episode too long. Like once they got into that whole, that the album, you know, the $1 million album and the silver rings and all, I was like, this is just extra. You kind of stretching this. It's like, it's there. I mean, it's part of the story, but it's not part of the core element. You know what I'm saying? But also, it's kind of weird because that's the episode two where the business comes into play too.
I'm about to say, about yeah,
the dealings and all that. So, but if you cut out the Silver Ring stuff, maybe, and maybe put something else in there besides, you know, that extra Rizzo on his crazy pilgrimage and doing all that,
yeah,
you know, I would have appreciated it more. You know, I feel like it would have had a better, you know, conclusion.
Yeah, but I actually disagree with you on that. I thought that was like the wow moment for me, like how he went about doing the art piece album. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it spoke a lot to his character. You're not saying like that's all. We all a good mixture of good, bad, and ugly, but it was that episode, because I kind of knew about the business before a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like Raekwon interviews and Ghostface going at him and all that. So I just from common sense, like as the years progressed, I'm like, and I knew a little bit about contracts and business, I'm like, it's the RZA is killing him. Like, you know what I'm saying?
It is a weird thing because that's the thing too, man, because like, I felt like it was still kind of incomplete because, you know, like just knowing a little bit more that wasn't, you know, even in the doc, you know, just from, you know, reading the books and stuff, there was a period that where you could kind of see where, you know, even before the business got funny, where he kind of felt alienated from his brothers, you know, at a certain point. Maybe his ideas of where he wanted to take the group wasn't on the same level as them. And, you know, these guys are really hood street cats, you know what I'm saying? And maybe their vision wasn't as big a scope as his. So I could see that, how that Silver Rings relationship kind of expanded. This is someone he could go to and he's not getting, you know, the negative feedback that he was getting from the group at this time.
Okay.
It's weird, man. It's a really complicated story and a really complicated tale, man. But that's
why I wanted to have the conversation with you, so we could talk about it from a fan perspective, and then we could talk about it from a business perspective, because I know you're probably, at least the people that I know, you know, I can't even think of anybody that's even close to being a fan like you are, and like, mm-hmm. you read all the books, you listened to the audio books, you watched everything Wu-Tang, and you was listening to all the albums way longer than anybody I know.
Yeah. It's tough now. Like it's harder for me to even, you know, a Wu project pops up and maybe certain cats I'll check for, but a lot of the other stuff is like, I haven't even listened to the last group album that they put out.
Yeah.
Not the last one, the one before that, the Better Tomorrow.
Okay.
The feedback was just so bad. I was like, I can't hear. It's like, you don't want to see your hero. You'd rather they die doing what they do. Then, you know what I'm saying? While they great, then to keep going back and just seeing it just deteriorate, man.
Yeah.
So say like some people got the mentality, they rather burn out than fade away. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah. Boxers do that. Like boxers, mm-hmm. I guess a lot of people do that. Like a lot of athletes and people that depend on their specific craft that they can't depend on for life. They rather, like they don't know when to necessarily stop. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like they, and you know, I don't know if I would be in that position, I wouldn't know when to stop. You know what I'm saying? Cause everybody think they shit is hot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Everybody does, man. It's interesting, man. But I guess, I don't know, man. I don't know how you want to, you know, maybe start with the beginning or how it all.
Yeah. So I think, so the content of it all, before we get into like, I think where we got the disagreement at, the content of it all was, I think it was great, man. Like the Wu-Tang is like the black Marvel universe for hip hop, I feel like. You know what I'm saying? Cause there's so many different personalities, and you could tell like, even early on, I got the sense of who was cooler with another person more than the other members. Like even from like early on when it entered the 36 Chambers, like it just seemed like certain people fit together more than others did, you know what I'm saying? And then like you saw that when Raekwon and Ghostface broke off and did their thing, you know what I'm saying? And then RZA and GZA. Well, RZA, I've actually never even listened to
RZA, I think, project. That's part of the genius of RZA, man, because like the thing about the Wu-Tang, and like, I mean, there's a great podcast out too, What Happened Was, with Open Mike Eagle and Prince Paul. And each episode is about a different album. So they did an episode about the Gravediggers album because Prince Paul was on that part of that group. And he was talking about working with RZA on that album at the time. At the same time, RZA was actually making 36 Chambers too. So he was jumping back and forth, you know, between both of those studios getting that done. But the crazy part about it was Prince Paul and RZA both had already been through the industry. I mean, they talk about it on the documentary a little bit, but the season of the show too, Prince Rakim, that was his first Tommy Boy Records. He never really, I'm not even sure if he actually made an album with them, but it just didn't work out. But he was able to take that experience and see how the industry worked and figure out, you know, what he had to do to come through as a second, you know, chance with this Wu-Tang group and make it all work. You know what I'm saying? So he's able to go out, and you know, bring it back around, you know, the genius of it. Like, he decided who's going on the track together. You know what I'm saying? All right, we got Spectre Deck, Raekwon on this Cream joint. We need a hook. Who's our best hook man? Let's get Method Man on that. Boom. And then, you know, later on after that album, all right, I'm going to put Ghostface and Raekwon together to make this Cuban Links album. You know, things like that. You know what I'm saying? Or I'm going to have Spectre Deck go first on this song. He has the best opening verses. You know, like things like that. You know,
you think RZA put the Ghost? You think RZA put Ghost and Ray together like
that?
Yeah,
or yeah. He says it. About it. And see, that's the thing too that comes into play because, that opening episode of the TV show, and you see Raekwon shoot up Ghostface's house.
Yeah, which didn't happen in real life. Yeah, it didn't happen in real life. Yeah.
No, it did.
It did happen in real life. I thought that part was made up. Okay.
And me being a Wu-Tang. I'm like, yo, what the fuck are they doing? What is this? So then, you know, come to find out, there's an interview with Papa Wu where he talks about that. He was like, yeah, you know, they were two different neighborhoods, Staple Hill, Park Hill,
Stapleton. Yeah.
And they was beefing. It was a beef. So they were both from either one of those hoods. But he's like, yeah, I was like, but he went through a lot. I remember when Power and Raekwon shot up Ghostface Crib. And I'm like, this is wild to me, dog. You talk about the money. I'm looking at that. Like, how would you go through that and survive that and end up working on records together? That's crazy to me. But maybe it's a testament to RZA's diplomacy, and because he had to pull all these cats together, man. Like I said, there was a one point where some of them grew up together. I think Raekwon, Meth, you got, you know, they all went to the same school, you know, they played with each other as kids and stuff like that. There's a story where you got, I forgot what it was. It was you got or it was Raekwon almost shot the other one playing with a gun as a kid, you know what I'm saying? When it goes off. So these, some of these cats was really tight, but then other cats, you know, being brought in like Master Killer, Genius, and you know, ODB, you know, some of them didn't have as such a close bond, but brought all this chaos together and made it work, man. And it's just crazy to me, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, so to give him, before I get crazy critical of him, to give him his credit, like, I you know, we went to the Art Institute of Philadelphia, and it was like, we had like about 10 people that could have been
Wu-Tang,
like that. Everybody had their own little specialty, and you had the cliques here and there, and you know what I'm saying? This person was with that person more. And just I can't imagine how, you know, they like late teens, early 20s, you keeping all these people together for one common goal for however long it took to record the album. You know what I'm saying? Because we couldn't even stay together like that to do things. You know what I'm saying? Like, people was over here and people was over there. And we weren't necessarily like, we might have been from the hood. Some of us from the hood, some of us wasn't, but we didn't necessarily. I guess that's a testament to the environment too, though. You know what I'm saying? I guess if we, you know, it's a testament to the environment and a testament to RZA's genius and masterminding this whole thing to keep them together to even make an album.
You've also got the fact too that this was a dream. This wasn't no short shot thing, you know what I'm saying? So, and you got some of these members out there in the street scrambling, you know, getting drug money, and to convince them that this is the way to, like, I love the element, and you know, you watch the season one of Wu right now, where it's at, and that's the thing with Raekwon's character. It's like, yeah, I see you guys doing this. You know, I like what you're doing, RZA. And RZA's trying to, yo, come mess with this rap. Come mess with this rap. But at the same time, you're seeing Raekwon starting to come up in the street game. It's like, well, I'm over here. I'm making moves. And it's crazy to still, like I said, with all the chaos in the background, whatever, you know, their living situations, and to still have them focus enough on this, you know what I'm saying, to pull this off, to pull off that 36 Chambers project, man. It's impressive, dude. Like, it's crazy.
So how do you like I guess this is the auxiliary part of the conversation. How do you like the series, the Wu-Tang?
I like the series, man. They're definitely, they're taking some liberties, you know, there's some characters' names that are changed, but a lot of the events that are happening in the show really happen. Maybe the names and the players are changed or shifted around a little bit, but I like it. The first few episodes are a little rough, but later on it hits a stride where it's like, yo, this is good, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm surprised at how good it is. I've seen some other RZA directed stuff and I'm like, kind of wilding, but this joint is actually really well done, man.
RZA directed some episodes on there though?
I think he did. He definitely directed some of. He's definitely involved in the writing.
They all involved in the writing, I think, except for U-God. I think he didn't sign off or something like that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing that's crazy. So U-God is confirmed for season two.
He's confirmed for season two. Yeah, absolutely. I think he wasn't in season one because he didn't co-sign off for some business thing, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, according to RZA, he said U-God was intended to always be in there, but I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But what's great about it, like I say, you're getting, you know, not only you're getting the story of this crew, but also like what's going on with the production, man. It's just black as hell, man. You know what I'm saying? We got, I forgot the actress' name, but from she played Maxine Shaw from Living Single. She's
Mom. Pam. Her name was Pam in there, right? Living Single.
Was it? I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's Pam. Her name was Pam. But go ahead, though. I think it
was Maxine, because Pam was on Martin.
Pam was on Martin. You're right. Yeah.
But it's just dope seeing all
she was
that
Pam. Movie. She was cousin Pam on Cosby Show.
Yeah. And as well as some of the actors they got playing the Klan members, you know, giving Joey Badass a job. You got Dave East, you know, as well as some of the other young up-and-comers, Shameik Moore, you know, he's in there. So it's dope to see it all, you know, come together. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, what's
the name? We get more. Like, why can't we get a Tribe Called Quest series, man? Or like a, you know, that would be dope, dude.
Like, now, I think this, I don't know what the numbers are like, but I feel like this could be like a, I don't think anything is going to be as big as Marvel as a franchise, but this can be a really good, like, Marvel-esque type of franchise that they, if they get the business right, man, I hope they're doing good business or business that everybody agreed to now. It seemed like everybody co-signed it because, like, when you read the credits, like, all of them got executive producer credits.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying?
It's my life.
Yeah. So, like, I could see, like, especially, like, you know, because they all can have their own little, you know, storylines. They could all have their own series, like, because they all have a life outside of Wu-Tang, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know, like, what the numbers are and how many people actually, you know, listen, watch it. I guess that's the numbers, but, they could all spin off and all.
I feel like this will probably run maybe two seasons. You might could squeeze three. I mean, he said, you know, the last article I read was that season two will definitely be centered around the recording of the 36 Chambers.
Okay.
But I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Like, personally, I would love to see, like, the Ghostface story, more of that.
That would be an interesting way. Yeah.
With his growing up with his brothers, you know what I'm saying? Like, what was that like? And, you know, all this weight, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would definitely love to see that. I would definitely love to see the old dirty version, like, you know, break off. They seem like to have the most, you know, twists and turns, it seems like, from the outside looking in, but who knows? I would definitely love to see, like, at least those break off.
Like to see, I think there's room. Maybe you could do some bonus mini series. You know, maybe give us three episodes on Ghost and or you know what I'm saying? Like you said, just kind of extend it a little bit. But overall, I think it's just dope that this is out there. It's opening the door for just more series, more deals. I think we got something in the works. I can't probably drawing a blank on it, but I feel like there's more hip hop based, you know, historical productions in the works now. You know what I'm saying? Based off of this being a success, you know, that it is.
Yeah. So let me get start doing the hot take stuff. I guess it's the hot takes now. Because, you know, we had to get that out there because people are like, yo, why you waiting on? I said, I guess I should stop trying to worry about what people going to say on the internet because they're going to say whatever they're going to say anyway.
What they going to say, man.
But so my critiques of it, I think, so I'm going to go with just the content. I'm not talking about, like, the business part yet. I would like to see more Master Killer. I feel like he's like he's still like a mystery to me, man.
Yeah.
Like, in a documentary, a like, mystery. You know, he's just in the back. And I mean, I guess maybe that's his personality. Like, he just, you know, the quiet guy. Because he barely said anything in the documentary except he did liven up when he was like, that wasn't even the Wu-Tang project at the end. When he talked about the art piece.
Oh,
he was
like,
that was like, well, I feel like before that, he was just there.
Yeah. His contribution is really interesting. I mean, he comes from a family of musicians, though. Like,
Yeah. We saw that in the documentary, yeah.
So I don't know what because he's not on the mic. That first album, he's on like one verse, I believe, if I'm correct, or maybe two.
He's only on one song. But he
killed it, though. He killed that Master Killer. What was that? Chess Boxing.
Yeah, he's only on that one song, as far as I can remember. He's only on one song. You God is on two.
Mm-hmm.
And RZA, I mean, GZA has a solo song. Meth has a solo song.
Yeah. Maybe his role wasn't on the mic per se. You know, maybe he was just part of that creative. Like, all right, yo, maybe you should do this, or maybe change it to that.
But I want to know more about him because I feel like he's a mystery. You know what I'm saying? Because they officially have him as a member.
Mm-hmm.
They officially have him as a member, and he, you know what I'm saying? I just feel like we don't know much about the dude, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It is. Maybe that's just by choice, but I do know he was the one that punched Cheo Coker in the face back in the day over that Source article when they put, like, they did a write up, but they couldn't get like a photo shoot with him, so they put all these caricatures.
I remember that. They didn't like that at all.
I think Master Killer ran down on the dude in the street and was like, what's up with that? And he said he punched him in the eye. And it's wild because Chio would be going to produce Luke Cage for Netflix. And it's crazy, even after that, this is a testament to the power of this group. He still put their music as heavily featured on that show, yo, in a bunch of key moments. And it's just like, yeah, he punched me in the mouth, but bring the ruckus, boy. I had to put that in.
Gotta put that in. So I would like to know more about him. Mm-hmm. The spinoff for the scripted show, I think Capadonna has an interesting story too, because I know a little bit more about it, because my cousin knows him, actually, because he spends a lot of time in Baltimore. I think he might be living in Baltimore now.
Yeah, he's been in Germantown a little bit too.
He was like a cab driver, so like interesting to know, like, what happened with his story, you know what I'm saying? Because he wasn't an original member, you know what I'm saying? Like, he really became a member after Only Built for Cuban Links. Yeah, that's when he really became a member.
Yeah, that's an interesting story behind that, because he was like a neighborhood guy, and Cap could rap. According to all these dudes, he could rap. According to them, there was a day they all battled, and Cap ate them all up off the head. But Ghostface and Raekwon had ran into like a writer's block area with Cuban Links. You know, they just had a bunch of tracks that weren't finished and didn't know what to do with. You God was in the studio with him, and You God was like, yo, go get Cap. And it's like, what? You God leaves the studio, go gets Cap. Cap comes in, still rocking his security guard outfit, because he was in the hood, he was a security guard. And he spit a couple verses off, like, just right there on the spot. You know, rocking the same outfit. I think he helped him finish Ice Cream. There's a couple joints on there, man. Because Ghostface had set up a narrative on that album, but it fell apart when it came down to put this thing together. And Capadonna helped him finish it, dude. Ice Cream.
Yeah, he got signed off that one long verse on Yes, the Shit Is Raw coming at your door. He got a deal off that, right?
But the deal was razor sharp. Epic deal, so it's like I feel like that deal was gonna go down anyway. Like RZA basically signed him to his own label, like, which is like,
oh, so he was signed to Razor Sharp, okay.
So let's get into
we disagree with the business part, or we disagree with the morals and the business part on RZA a little bit.
I don't know, I've had some thinking on it, you know, since, you know, we had that talk, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so let's just give that the background in case people don't know. But I think my demographic, people going to know what I'm talking about, but just some background information. So RZA signed all of the Wu-Tang members to Wu-Tang Productions before they had a record deal. Except for what's name said he was the only he didn't sign. Jizzy was the only one that didn't sign. He said that in his documentary. Yeah. He said he was the only one that wasn't on the contract.
Well, you know what's interesting with Jizzy? Jizzy was also a cat who had already been through
the industry. He knew the business. He knew the business. So he knew not to sign that joint. And so apparently, you know, anybody that, that doesn't know, like generally speaking, a production deal, they take 50% off top. So what? So when you sign to a record label, if you got a halfway decent product, they might take more. You know what I'm saying? So you have like
that's kind of standard with music.
Yeah, yeah. So they take 50% off any deal you get, and then you have obligations to the production company that may be out. Well, it should be in accordance with the record company per se. Maybe not. It could be longer than the record company. So
just a hypothetical. Yeah. I've signed a RZA on a production tip. So say. You know, RZA's label, you know, production company makes a deal with, say, Def Jam. And Def Jam throws me $1 million. So off top, RZA's going to get
500,000 of that. Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. We're going to keep it simple because it can be tricky, but he's going to get 500 off that. And so what ends up happening, and this is where, you know, production. So I'm not going to throw a lot of record labels that we thought were record labels back in the days were actually production companies. Mm-hmm. Like, so for example, Bad Boy was really a production company. You know what I'm saying? But he marketed himself as a record label. So Def was really a production company. Like, and the reason I'm saying that, if they hear this, you know, they be like, yo, this, what the fuck is he talking about? You know what he's talking about? Like, if you don't own your masters you're, in my opinion, you're not a record label. And if you are going to someone to write you a check to produce an album and then you owe them that album, you're a production company. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they might be like, yo, he don't know what to talk about. I've been in this business with that. But like, you know, Bad Boy, they don't own their masters. I don't think Puff owns any of their masters. Mm-hmm. So Def, he definitely doesn't own his masters. Rockefeller, Jay-Z just got his masters. Everything Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, he just got his personal masters back from Def Jam when he took the job. Who else was out there back in the day?
He's like, I'm gonna release these while I'm up here.
Yeah. He just got his masters back. So that's part of his beef with well, I don't know. I ain't gonna talk about Dame. I like Dame. So So he had a production deal. So you go in, you get $1 million, RZA gets 500 off top. So and then he gets, if he's producing everything, he gets 500. I mean, he gets 50% of every royalty and publishing of every track. And then if he's actually has writer's credit, he gets part of that part of the track too. So he get, you know, he maybe gets 75% of the publishing off one track, and writer's credit off one track because he's the producer. So off top, he gets 50%, and then he splits it with the rest of the clan or whoever's on the track. So this is the fishy part that I knew was fishy even when I was a youngster, when they were saying, like, we all get paid equally. I was like, that's impossible. I was like, even though I was young, I was like, if I'm Method Man, there's no way in hell I'm splitting my money evenly with Master Killer. Like, I'm not doing
maybe,
that.
Maybe the show money, maybe that was maybe evenly, show money. I can see that, but even that was scaled up because I remember reading about the end. It's like, man, we did some shows for $100 and there's 9 of us. So we split that shit.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I can't see how they was splitting it evenly ever. You know what I'm saying? So the reason RZA has them on a production deal. So every time he gets them a record deal, he gets half, right? So Divine, his brother, talked about it's just business or whatever. Oh, we didn't even talk about Divine, but we talk about it as we talk about the business.
I think Divine and Power deserve some mention.
Yeah. So Divine and Power and the early manager cat too. He deserves some mention. I don't know his name though. But
that dude was funny in the doc.
Yeah, he was funny. He's funny as hell in the documentary. So what ends up happening is that, you know, you have a record, you have a production deal. So you sign a Wu-Tang Productions. So no matter where you go to get a record deal, they're always going to eat as long as you're on that production company. And RZA probably structured to where he was charging the record label for the money for beats. Mm-hmm. He probably was charging them for studio time. He probably was which he should, because, like, you know, that I think where it gets tricky at is that they probably didn't go in thinking that's about that business aspect of it. Like, yo, you're going to be charging us for studio. You're going to be charging our budget for studio time and for the track that we're getting. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then, like, allegedly,
the way it would typically go is like it comes out of the budget. You know what I'm saying? Which, you know, whatever that, you know, like, you know, let's just say Raekwon. I think he got like maybe $500,000 advance for when he signed with Loud. And that's part of your budget. Most artists don't know that. Like, yeah. You're supposed to record with that. Like,
absolutely.
And some dudes are just, yo, that's my car, that's my house. I'm like, but how you going to record this album? Then you might have to borrow that shit back from the label if you disbanded.
So the way a production company sets up, whoever's the owner of the production company is always going to make money off your album versus the artist. You may never make money off the album. So, So I think the issue becomes is where we would disagree. And when do you say, you know what, yo, we started this together. Like, obviously I'm Voltron or whatever. Now they said Genius was the Voltron, right? They said Genius was the head, right? But it really was RZA. But he probably was like, that probably was all part of his mastermind too. Like, yo, I'll let Jizza say he's the head. It really was RZA the head guy. You know what I'm saying? So it was like RZA was the head brain. Divine and Power was the money. So they gotta eat. So RZA gotta eat and you know, he put all these people together. I think the issue becomes, especially when you're dealing with that many people, like when RZA, like, you're getting 50% no matter what. Well, your company, Wu-Tang Productions, is getting 50% no matter what. When you go to these record labels, and then your peoples, your boys, your artists are getting the scraps left over, like, at what point do you be like, yo, like, it doesn't make, especially like after you're not making the beats like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, at what point do you say, you know what, y'all can go ahead and do your own, I'm gonna let y'all out. But your boy, before the boy Devon was like, nah, this is business. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had a $90 million business. I mean, yeah.
What do you do? Like,
what do you do?
I don't know what's going on in Riz's brain, dude. I don't know why, but I don't see it as being any different than Puffy, you know, making the deal with Big that he did, and that's his man, or any other Bad Boy artists. It's kind of like, position if this is your Bad Boy family for life. So
the reason I look at it a little differently, and you know, the reason I look at it a little differently is because I guess it's like they quote unquote was family. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's actual real family in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, RZA, Jizza, and ODB are actually related. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're actually blood relation, and they actually, so versus like Bad Boy, like Puff went and found Big. You know what I'm saying? Like, versus like Wu-Tang, like, you know, we all knew each other around. We just, RZA, you put it together, but we were all doing this already. We just didn't take it serious. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of see it a little differently in that way. And then the way they presented it, the way they marketed themselves as the world, like we're brothers for, you know what I'm saying, forever, like my seeds marry his seeds, you know what I'm saying? Behind the scenes is like, I'm not even mad at him for initially doing that, because it makes perfect sense. I think my issue, and I shouldn't have an issue with it, because they obviously they doing business together now, but we talked about this, like, I don't know if I would be able to do business with him, because my life is not dependent on a Wu-Tang brand, you know what I'm saying? So, it's like,
I think that might be one of the things that even maybe now they might have sorted out some of the differences on the business level, but it sucks because they're all linked to that brand, you know what I'm saying? No individual, maybe a couple of them could get by on their own, like maybe Meth can still do his thing, Ghostface, you know, certain ones, but it's like, none of them are really bigger than that brand. And I wonder if that was even by design. Like,
That's a great point. I didn't think about that. I like to think that no one knew it was going to be that big. This is like Amazon. Like, if you set homie down, what's his name? Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs is, that's not Amazon. That's Apple,
Bezos,
right?
My bad, Bezos.
Yeah, Bezos. So if you sat him down and like, yo, when he first started Amazon, yo, do you know Amazon is gonna be a content creator? You're gonna sell everything under the. You're gonna basically have your own mail company. Because, I mean, he basically made his own mail company, right? It's like, I remember
when they first started, dude. Like, when I still had to dial up the internet. And it was even risky. Like, my moms didn't even feel good buying a book from them.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
you know, like I don't want to put my card out there.
Exactly. So I'm assuming, like, if you sat RZA down at that time, it was like, yo, do you know what this is going to be? Like, he can't imagine it was going to be that big. You know what I'm saying? Like, he probably thought it was going to be, but you can't imagine how big something like that is going to be. You know what I'm saying? Because we talked about Bitcoin and all that. We in our little group chat and Doggy Coin. Mm-hmm. Like, if you knew what it was going to be when it was $10, you would have been on it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, nobody knows what the future holds, but mm-hmm. you're right. Like, so I don't think it was by design that the Wu-Tang brand was bigger than all of them. But it's just the way it played out because nobody stood out outside. I guess Method Man and Ghostface. But outside of that, I don't think anybody really stands out that could do their thing without the Wu-Tang. Maybe Raekwon, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's still putting projects out there. You know, some of them are better than others. He's still eating. But even then, you still, it's Wu. You're throwing a W up. You know what I'm saying? Or you're getting your clan members on this track or whatever. But like the only thing that I think maybe... but even then, I don't think he knew how big it was going to get was the decision to structure the deals like that. Like they actually took less money up front for the ability to have all the individual artists be able to go out.
Do their own thing. But, yeah. you know, it makes sense from like just the behind the scenes lawyer stuff, like that they all signed to the Wu-Tang as a production company, because he wouldn't have been able to do that if they weren't mm-hmm. under production company.
Because even with that, he's still retaining some control. Like,
Switron, to get to them,
he's still going to have to go through me.
That
becomes interesting when it gets to the point where they start making and taking offers for the individual deals, man. Like apparently there was a war for Raekwon, man, just off the strength of that Cream single.
Yeah.
Like I said, that's how they got that up to, you know, the 500,000. Because typically it would be like maybe 100,000. That's a great deal to sign as an individual rapper. You know what I'm saying? But that buzz and the bidding competition puts his number way higher than what an average rapper would get. You know, as a signing bonus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, they didn't touch on it because publishing is another part too. Like. So what was the publishing situation like? So does Wu-Tang Production have 50? Did they have 50% of the publishing too? Because publishing is
I don't know, man. I feel like at certain points that's negotiations. You know what I'm saying? And that's going to also depend on the artist. You know what I'm saying? And it's weird too because you could kind of see who was buzzing and who wasn't. Because I think Meth was the first one to sign. And as a solo, and then ODB, and then Raekwon got his deal, you know, kind of in that order. But these were the ones that were standing out the most initially. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Their first big single was Method Man joint.
And it's interesting because that even breaks down on a level because RZA even talks about how he's like, all right, I'm going to send Method Man to Def Jam. You know what I'm saying? I want ODB on Epic. And I'm like, you were that sure of what he had. And you know what I'm saying?
I think some of it is he putting on a little bit or he misremembering. I just don't see him be.
Some of that stuff's accurate.
Some of it is definitely accurate. I don't know if he was that like, yo, you're definitely going. You know what I'm saying? Epic. You know what I mean?
Because one of the things is there's some of the artists they talk about having deals on the table with these persons, but you know, listening to RZA is like, yo, you better off here, and you know what I'm saying? Because I think what it was still like, even though he retained control of them through that Wu-Tang Productions, but he also wanted that Wu-Tang flag to have a stamp and a lot, you know, because I think at that time, man, I think it was more spread out back then, but you still even only had maybe at the most maybe five majors that were running everything.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like what's that GZA song? The GZA song labels, all those labels he's mentioned, there's probably like four or five bigger companies that owns all of those other, you know, labels that he was mentioning.
Tommy
that.
Ain't my motherfucking boy. Yeah. I heard RZA album. The only I've never heard of RZA album.
I've heard of Bobby Digital. There might be three joints on there that I like.
He's definitely made
songs that I liked, but overall he's one of those guys where he makes an album and maybe there's two or three that I'll be like, all right, I'll go back.
He's a weird cat though. He's definitely like a weird dude. I mean, it comes across. He embraces it, and they show it, and the saga continues. Like, you know, he's a different type of dude.
And I think one of the aspects of him as a creator, he's always going to the next level. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes that next level, the rest of the land might be like, nah, I don't know what you're talking about, RZA. This is wild. Nah, go back to that shit that made us hot. You know, and I think that's what people keep coming back to these projects for. But honestly, man, RZA's on some next level. I truly believe he's a real musician, man. There's, you know, you've got beat makers and, you know, they come and go, which is a different level than a producer, where I will put up there with Dre and RZA, people that can really produce. You know, they're not just making beats, and they actually know, all right, this is where the hook needs to come in. You should say that here, or you should say it like that. I think there's a difference, you know, between them and just beat makers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100% fact. Like, so people, I think part of the reason why people get have issues with Puff, because they say he don't actually make beats. Nah, and it's just like, yo, bro, like, he doesn't. It's a difference between a beat maker and a producer. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And a lot of people don't really know that because they don't do the work. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a difference between, like, you know, like, you can make a hot beat all day, but can you give it that spice? Do you know who should go in there? Do you just know what the hook should be sound like? You know what I'm saying? Do you know, like, the mixing part? Like, all right, drop that hi-hat out, raise the bass. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't, that's all production, really. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what a producer does. So I didn't really, as a fan and, you know, as a lawyer, I definitely was like, as a lawyer, I understood why he did what he did. As a fan, I was like, damn, that's kind of shitty. But yeah, I wasn't. I was still rocking with him. I was still rocking with him throughout the documentary, because after they was talking about, you know, because I knew this prior to the documentary, I was still rocking with him. Like, I understand why you did what you did, and I understand why you don't want to let them go, even though they're your peoples.
See, but that's the part, honestly, that's what got to me, not wanting to let them go. Like, that the heyday is over, the run is over. You got in.
At so that's time. What you got to in, you, yeah.
You got in at Bitcoin when it was 10 cents. and now you know that it's, you know, you're still trying to squeeze more out of it, or you're still trying to retain control, man. And that's, that does rub me a little, you know what I'm saying? Who knows what he was thinking in the beginning? Maybe he didn't even think this thing was going to be. So let me get mine now, and who knows?
That part had me. I'm glad. I think we was on opposite ends when we was doing the texting. But really, what got me was when I was like, damn, was when he did the art piece joint and the way he did them on that one. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you released
these.
And he know he did them dirty because he was quiet in that part. You know what I'm saying? They all had. They all had like input on how the documentary came out, because when you look at the producers, they all got input. Yeah, so he
that
just sitting.
That is an interesting format, though. I got to give them props for that, to actually have them watching the documentary.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, and record. Like, that was a crazy, interesting, creative choice, and I think that stands out a bit. You know, because it is, you don't see the reactions, and you can kind of just fill the room, like, and it's just like, damn.
So the album. See, and this is why I didn't even know anything about the. I knew that Raekwon and Ghostface was very vocal about the album being trash in real time.
Yeah. Well, they was like, this is trash. I had heard the Silver Rings guy over the years, just from being familiar with their music. He will pop up every now and then, having produced something or producing something on one of these Wu-Tang affiliate group projects.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So when I was like really was like, yo, I mean, I think we doing, I don't know if I'm doing too much cursing for your YouTube joint, but when I was
I'm good, man. I'll be good. My mom told me not to cuss so much, but for this show, we be fine, man.
So then I was like, you know, what's really effed up was when he went about producing that out, quote unquote, masterminding that album, mm-hmm. and the way he went about it was all like secretive, and he, in the documentary he kind of says like it was secretive because, you know, he didn't want people really to know, but it's really secretive because you know that they was going to charge you their real price when
they knew it was a real album, but,
And then you sold it, and then you don't break them off, and you say like, "Yo, there was a work for hire." Like, come on, B. Like you doing the lawyer game now? You know what I'm saying?
you know what I'm saying?
Like you hadn't recorded a project under the guise of like, "Yo, this is my man," because none of them seem to really be cool with dude like that. Like, yo, my man is recording an album. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it was over like 2 years or whatever.
Or if it's like. RZA would call them, yo, you know, I need a look for this project I'm working on. My man's gonna hit you up. Boom. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just not being clear about the intentions, man, you know?
Yeah, and then to go sell it and not give them any of the profits. It kind of sort of like, yo, damn, bro, like, I don't know about you right now.
it's complicated, man. It's a messed up history because I feel like, they touch on the documentary, you know, RZA brought in a lot of his family as management, even tour management, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they even talked about sometimes being whisked away to do a second show that night and the cousin's pocketing the money, not even going through RZA. The cousin is even coming up with the plan. Oh. Well, I could double dip on these cats. I'll throw them a little bit, but I'm going to keep, you know, most of this 10,000 or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It just gets really wild, dude. The thing that gets me too, when you look at the, you know, executive producers on that album, it's Mitchell Diggs. I think that's Divine.
Yeah.
Robert Diggs, RZA, Dennis Coles, you know what I'm saying?
Ghostface.
Ghostface. It's weird. They don't have the Power on here. I don't know if Power was on here. He's Ollie Power Grant, executive producer, production supervisor. That's weird. But anyway, you know. I guess Ghostface, that's his direct cousin, you know what I'm saying? Which is weird why ODB didn't get a credit. You know what I'm saying? He was there too. But pretty much, you know, they're eating off of this album still, man. You hear a Wu-Tang song or whatever. But what's interesting, when the Wu-Wear came out, that was all Power's enterprise. You know what I'm saying? He got the Wu-Tang logo on everything. He got all of that bread, dude. Maybe he broke RZA off or something. But none of the other members got.
So it was Power. Power is Ghostface people's cousin.
That's Raekwon's people. Power was the one that him and
Raekwon. Yeah, when it and the saga continues. Yeah. Saga continues.
Yeah. It's such a wild story, man. It's crazy, dude. The whole thing. But yeah, it's like there's so many opportunities where you could have been fair and you just didn't. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. So let's end on Divine. How did you leave feeling about Divine?
I don't know, man. Like the Divine was he's there, so he kind of had to be in on it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Structuring the deals and shit and all that. So he could have came through, but there's also a moment too, you know, at least with him, he straight up said it's business. You know what I'm saying? I can respect that a little bit because there's a part later on where he talks about bringing the Clan a $1 million deal. And he's like, I just wanted my manager's fee, which is what, like 12%? I think he
said 20%, I think he said, yeah.
Oh, 20%. All right. So he would have got, what, 100?
200,000.
Yeah. And
Ghost was like, now
I'm on. No, my bad. I think it was like a $4 million deal, dog. I think he said, or some shit like that. I can't remember exactly.
And yeah, Ghost was like, yo, I want all my money, or something like that.
All my money. You ain't even get the deal. I get what Ghost was saying. And to me, that speaks to how burnt he feels overall, you know, just from all the other previous business, you know, to the point where I don't even want to be fair or trust him anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe in his brain, he's like, oh, I'm not, why do I give you a cut? You know, you're trying to rip me off, or maybe you ripped me off in the past. So I'm just trying to break even now. Give us all that.
The thing I respect about Divine though, like you said, I think, cause he, I don't know how he was doing it in real time, but I think Ghost hit on and said, like, yo, this is business. And he's like, yo, after he said that, I was like, I put that in my pocket. Remember that. It's just business with him. Like, so, but I think RZA, from the outside looking in, was less clear that it's business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, especially the whole thing to get it started. I mean, that was the miraculous part about it. He told them all, give me 5 years, I'm gonna change your life. And he did, but
he effed them. He effed them a little bit. He effed them a little bit. He effed them a little bit on it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he technically he did what was in the contracts, but you still, like, just because it's in the contract don't mean it's right. We just went through that with Dave Chappelle, right? When he talked about just because, you know, the contract is legit don't mean that, you know, that you should be done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy too, because they just recently reversed course. That joint's back on Netflix, and
because he got his,
some bread with him.
Yeah. Wild. So what you got coming up? What you would name drop?
Well, right now I'm still continuing with the From the Canopy Podcast Network. You know, we're putting out just more video content, man. You know what I'm saying? Trying to get all the shows converted to video. I just put up the first Cable Killers video. Trying to still get my co-host on camera. I think he's scared, but I'm like, bro, you got to get over here, man. This is where the attention is at. We're definitely flipping toward that. My Monk's Box series, I'm really having fun.
I like the
that.
Monk's Box series. I haven't been able to catch the podcast. Like, I don't really catch. It's not a person. I don't really catch any podcast like that. Except for Brilliant Idiots in my podcast. But outside of that, hard for me to listen to any of them, because I'm just not traveling.
Time constraints. Yeah. But the box though, they're quick usually.
Yeah, the box. I like the box joint, Joe. Mm-hmm. I like the box. I think that shows your personality more too, and you're getting more comfortable with it.
Just my whole thing is too, I just like sharing information and knowledge and talking about the shit that I'm into. So it was just that's what I tell you. If you try to get into any of this, man, do what you like, man. Do it about what you like, because it's going to make it easier, man. It's not going to feel so worky. You know, there's times I get bogged down where I'm like, damn, I got 3 videos to edit and this and that, but I like doing it. So that gives me the extra juice to just push through and get it done, man. But yeah, that's it, man. I'm just gonna keep dropping more videos and hitting people in the head and just figure out ways to promote this. I'm also on Twitch now too, man. It's Twitch. It's Monkey Blood on Twitch, but it's spelled a little bit differently.
Yeah, we send it to me. We put it in the show notes. I'm sure you're gonna put it in your show notes.
I'm trying to get more toward that too, man. Just working on that platform. Just trying to maximize these platforms and figure out how I could just, you know, use them to my advantage and just grow this thing, man. I might even be on TikTok soon, man. Who knows?
Yeah, you got to get on TikTok, bro. You got to get on TikTok, and we'll talk about it behind the scenes.
Hey,
you got to get on. I just got on. I've been on TikTok, but I posted the first video. The reach, I don't know how they come up with them numbers, but the reach is crazy, yo.
Oh,
The reach is crazy. But let me tell you, I got the Redefine Print, the podcast. This is what this is going to be on. I got the YouTube page. I don't know any of this stuff off the top of my head, like the names of them. I got a Twitch page, so I'm going to put that in the show notes. But I do have the entrepreneurship, the Women and Minority Entrepreneurship boot camp going up. It's up. It's just going to be a show. It's on Eventbrite. Spaces are limited, so if you want to be involved in that, please, you know, do it sooner rather than later. And if you watch, so if the first 5 people that register, if you use Black History, I think this code is still going to be relevant by the time this come out. If you use a Black History, you're going to get 20% discount. 25%, I believe it is. 25% discount on
your website. So what made you pick the women's entrepreneur versus, you know, say, working, you know, with men's side?
Nah, so it's the minority and women. So,
It's
minority. So I don't want to work with, I'll work with white dudes later on, but right now, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have nothing against white dudes, but I think at this point in time, like, the disparity between white male ownership and everybody else is just crazy. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
remember that minority.
Honestly,
that's who I've been turning to help me with the technical stuff of this, man. Like, especially like on the Twitch, like, I follow a lot of Black women creators, and honestly, they're killing it in ways that are. I feel like a lot of times, like, the Black Twitch guys, they're kind of following the model set by the white dudes, but the Black women, they're more taking it into their own. They're also a lot more helpful too, man. You know, I hit them up about tech questions or what kind of equipment they're using.
Yeah,
and they've been embracing me.
I'm telling you, we're gonna talk about behind the scenes more on that, but send me those creators. And everything is going to be, I'm going to send you all my stuff so you have it. Mm-hmm. And you send me all your stuff so we have it, so when we share, you know, everybody got the access mm-hmm. to it. But I have a theory on that, man, with Black women support, man. Like mm-hmm. most of my support come from Black women too, yo.
Yeah, bro. Hey, I'm sleeping, you know.
Most of my support, like, yo, if I ask them for something, they be like, yo, I got, you know what I'm saying? Like, versus mm-hmm. dudes is like, Black dudes specifically, I don't know if it's the crabs in the barrel. So I've never been like that. So I can't wrap my mind. Yeah. Like with you, like, yo, like I share, like shit. I buy, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not that, I don't have the scarcity mindset. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it's enough out here for everybody, yo. Like, yeah, if I get 100,000 or whatever I'm going to get, like, you know, Amazon, the dude has billions. Like, why are you worried about me? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's crazy, man. It's crazy, dude.
Like,
man.
My 100,000 is not going to take away from your 100,000. If it does, then that means you're not doing something right. You know what I'm saying?
It's a lot of, like, Highlander. It can only be one type, you know? Yeah. I'm like, bro, it's everybody can shine, man. Like, yeah, it's wild, bro.
Yeah. But all right, man. So, thanks for tuning in, people. And as always, if you like this podcast, please like, rate, review, and more importantly, or most importantly, share. And go follow Corey at all his links that is going to be in the show notes. And follow me at all my links. And we're going to just try to keep this thing moving. I'm mm-hmm. still learning. Corey's a little bit more seasoned, but we're going to get it together, man. And I'll see y'all on the next episode. All right, peace.
All right, folks, peace.